Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to invite you personally to join me and Breadbox Media on August 24th in New Oxford, Pennsylvania, for a day of spiritual renewal. I'll be presenting three talks, one on St. Joseph, one on the sacrament of matrimony, and another one on the Holy Eucharist. Learn more and register at breadboxmedia.com/PA conference. I hope to see you there.
Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com.
Wow. Finally on. My fellow truth seekers, welcome to Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets, where truth, life, and love are one, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Thank you for hanging on tonight. We are live here, usually from 10 to 11 because of extenuating circumstances. We're starting a little late, and we will probably end also a little late. But we do still have a wonderful, wonderful show for you tonight. And that is because we have a wonderful guest that's going to be joining us very shortly via the telephone, Dr. Janet Smith. And she is the creator of the talk Contraception, Why Not?, which went viral even before the internet was around, by way of CD, cassette, and pamphlet. And she's the author of the bombshell book, Humani Vitae, A Generation Later, which was written for the 25th anniversary of Humani Vitae back in 1991. And for those of you who are not Catholic or do not know what Humani Vitae is, we will talk about that and why it's so important to everybody in our day and age. And Dr. Smith is also the professor of moral theology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, internationally renowned and one of the more important authors and speakers of our day. Did I do her justice? John Tudorus, who is beside me in the studio.
Almost. You forgot one thing. She also teaches, I think, a class at my school, which is Holy Apostles.
Oh, she teaches at your school also?
Yeah, it's online adjunct, but yeah.
Wow. Well, did you have a class with her?
Not yet,
but you hope to.
Perhaps.
You were in the master's program of philosophy, and now you are starting the master's in theology over there.
Correct. My concentration will be dogmatic theology. So if I have room in the electives, then yes, absolutely.
Okay. Fantastic. You ready? You ready to have her?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's do it. Dr. Janet Smith, are you with us?
I am, finally. My apologies.
Oh, and ours, too. Actually, there was a minor league baseball game on this radio station right before, so we were going to start about 5 or 10 minutes late anyway. But thank you very much for joining us. It's an honor to have you.
It's good to be here.
Great. Now, you, as I introduced you, you have a name, of course, for being a staunch defender of the Catholic Church, of Pope Paul VI, and the Church's teaching on contraception. And if I could, if we could take the hour here to do the first half on how contraception has affected us and our world today, and maybe the second part on Humani Vitae itself. Does that sound okay?
That's fine with me.
Fabulous. Okay, let's see. Contraception is, why don't we first begin with how it affects women's health?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And it's amazing how few women know what is really happening to their bodies when they're taking any of the hormonal contraceptives. And these, any of the chemical contraceptives, Norplant, Yaz, the pill, all use hormones, synthetic forms of the natural forms of hormones that women have in their bodies. Our hormones are very much a part of us. I actually have a talk that's called Hormones Are Us. And a woman has a very complicated cycle, actually. She has four, every woman, we have four major fertility hormones. Two of them help us to ovulate every month, and two of them build up a nice surface in the uterine wall, the endometrium, that's going to receive any new little baby who is conceived. And if you had a chart in front of us, you would see that this is like hills and valleys, and they crisscross during the months. And any woman, really, and most women can sense this, we're different chemically every day of the month. We're not the same person. And I always make the joke that we don't know who we are until we talk to somebody, and it's usually some male. And we won't know whether we're the sweetest person on the face of the earth or possibly a real shrew. And it's really a chemical matter.
And this is why, traditionally, there's been a joke about, you know, about the women changing their mind all the time and all that kind of stuff. Because they are hormonally different every day.
We are hormonally different every day of the month. And men are hormonally exactly the same every day of the month. And so if you wonder why men are the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and women are incredibly
complicated,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that these hormones are very important for women in many respects. I'll talk a bit more about that later. But what researchers discovered was that a way to help a woman be infertile would be to suppress her fertile hormones, the hormones especially that cause her to ovulate every month. Because if a woman doesn't ovulate, she can't get pregnant. If there's no egg there to be impregnated by a sperm, again, she can't get pregnant. So what they've done is they've put into a woman's body the hormones that are present when she's pregnant, not the real hormones, synthetic forms,
right,
artificial forms, steroids, actually. These are steroids that they put in a woman's body. She takes a pill every day, or she uses some other form of chemical contraceptive, and she's suppressing her normal hormones. She's not in any normal state. A woman is either supposed to be going through fertile cycles or be pregnant during the fertile phase of her life.
And this makes her body think it's pregnant? Is that it?
It's a what? It makes the body think it's pregnant. It's kind of a woman's in a state of pseudo-pregnancy for the period of time that she's using any chemical contraceptives. She's not in any normal state. And so these hormones have all sorts of effects on women. These are considered by doctors, that a woman has more irritability, is more prone to depression, has a greater chance of weight gain, and has a lower libido, all right, a lower sex drive. So a woman is taking the chemical contraceptives, one supposes, to enable her to have sex, but it reduces her sex drive.
Why is that?
Right? Because a woman has a lower sex drive when she's pregnant.
Ah,
evolutionarily
that makes
speaking,
sense.
There's no need for a woman to have a desire to have sex, because a desire to have sex, as far as evolution is concerned, is a desire to propagate the species. But if you're already pregnant, there's no need for that.
Is it also true that it creates an imbalance in the pheromones, and men are not as attractive to them at that time, and they're not attracted to the right kind of men when they're in that state?
Yes, it's a fascinating thing. This is something that's only been discovered in about the last 20, 25 years. This is not something that Pope Paul VI knew when he wrote Humanae Vitae. And anybody women should do this. Just type in contraceptives and pheromones and relationships. What happens is that, again, you can speak evolutionarily. Men are much more attracted to women who are having fertile cycles. This has been proven by all sorts of tests on the animal kingdom, and they're very interesting. There's a book called by a man named Lionel Tiger called The Decline of Males, and he talks about a famous study that he and some of his colleagues did. They had a group of monkeys on a island, and the chief monkey that they named Austin chose three of the female monkeys to be his exclusive sexual partners.
Okay.
And then they gave a shot of Depo-Provera to the females, and Austin lost all interest in the females. And then they gave shots of Depo-Provera to all the females of the tribe, and all the males stopped having sexual play with the women or intercourse and began to act in a turbulent and confused fashion.
Interesting.
They removed the women from the Depo-Provera, and the male monkeys resumed their usual sex lives.
Now, you attribute this to pheromones that we unconsciously sense or smell in the opposite sex?
That's right. Pheromones are received through our olfactory nerves, through the sense of smell. Though they don't have a scent, you don't know that you're receiving them.
Mm.
Another fascinating study, which goes precisely to the point that you're talking about, they had a group of human males sitting in a room looking at pictures of supermodels. And they rated them for their attractiveness, and of course they rated them very attractive. And then they showed them pictures of ordinary females and put in the room something that was soaked with female fertile hormones. All right, so the men were making an association between these pictures and what they were receiving through their olfactory nerves.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the ordinary women more attractive than the supermodels.
Interesting.
Interesting. So it just makes me sad to think of women spending millions of dollars on makeup and clothing and everything, and then using contraceptives, which are bad for them in many respects, but also turning them off from them.
That's absolutely amazing. We think that we're attracted simply by sight, but that's not really the case.
Exactly. I mean, it's these pheromones are very important. And one time I was in Kansas giving a talk, and he came up to me and he said, listen, you don't need to tell us that in Kansas. He said, we all know that in Kansas, if you have a bull in a pen and a cow that is a mile away and there's three fences in between, when she's fertile, he will get there. Okay. So those who know the animal kingdom know this very well. They actually have – people are now having parties that are called pheromone parties where men and women – in fact, you mentioned that women – choose different types of men,
while they're on
the contraceptives
pill.
Or not on contraceptives. And they did a famous T-shirt test, which these parties are kind of mimicked after, where they had two groups of females, one who was contracepting and the other that was not. Mm-hmm. And then they had the males wear a T-shirt for a day. And at the end of the day, the women smelled the T-shirts. And women are very attracted to men on the basis of smell. Many women will tell you that the way a man smells is very important to them.
Hmm.
And the women who were using these men were rated. I don't know exactly how they did it. I think health and aggressiveness and that sort of thing, accomplishments. Men were rated for their sort of evolutionary desirability. And the women who were not contracepting chose men at the top of the rating of their evolutionary desirability.
Okay.
And the women who were contracepting chose the men at the lower levels of evolutionary desirability. So, you know, our bodies are designed to help us, strangely enough, make good choices. And there's even evidence that if that women who are not contracepting are more likely to choose men with whom they can reproduce, right? That they're going to have a higher possibility of fertility, of having children with men. So that, and there's many other studies that are fascinating now that women who use contraception are more suicidal. That's partly their depression, I'm sure, that comes with the hormones. And you mentioned health. There's greater incidence of some forms of cancer, greater incidence of heart attacks and strokes for women who are using hormonal contraceptives. I'm always talking about the hormonal contraceptives. Of course, the big other contraceptive is the condom, which actually deprives women of something that's very important in sexual intercourse, which is the male semen contains in it proteins that a woman's body can absorb.
Hmm.
And that when she absorbs those, she has a better sense of well-being.
Yes.
Right? So there's all these interesting chemical factors that we're interfering with by using contraceptives.
If I could just go back a half a step. Are you saying to clarify that women who are on the pill, generally, as studies indicate, they would generally be more attracted to men that aren't as procreatively suited for them? more like
that's right.
more
that's
like
right.
family members rather than spouses.
Well, they say people have done this by looking at movie stars. They've done a study of male movie stars over decades, and it showed that before the pill appeared, it was much more masculine men, John Wayne his sort, very masculine men who were movie stars. And now they say there's kind of wimpy movie stars, Johnny Depp and even Brad Pitt at times. So the look is not a really, really strong masculine look.
And that brings us to another question here relating to the environment. I'm sure you've heard of all of the hormones and chemicals that go into perhaps our drinking water. Tell us about some of the studies that you know of regarding fish and the feminization of fish and what that means for us.
I highly recommend that your listeners go to Google and just type in contraception, estrogen, fish. If they want to get it really more precise, they could put in Boulder, Colorado. But it's been found all over the world. It's been found in the United States and in England and in Africa. That fish apparently can change their gender even as developed adults if they get enough of the opposite hormone in their systems.
Okay.
And in Boulder, Colorado, there's a study that's done that upstream from a sewage plant, the percentage of male to female fish is pretty much 50-50.
Okay.
Downstream from the sewage plant, where a lot of estrogen is dumped into the system because of contraception and plastics that have estrogen in them, the rate is closer to 80 female to 20 males.
Hmm.
Right? So 50-50 upstream, male and female. Downstream, where they're absorbing into their body estrogen, the male's fish turn and become female fish, and then they have a few, you know, intersex fish that you can't identify which one they are. So there's been a huge decline in human male fertility over the last several decades.
Yeah.
No one can quite put their finger on them, but it seems to me researchers would be foolish not to be looking at contraception as a possible source.
And seeping into our drinking water.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. John, you have any thoughts at this point?
No, I'm actually listening.
Okay. The contraception...
I want to mention one more thing about the bad environmental effects of contraception. And, people talk now about carbon footprints. And I want people to think about the carbon footprints of contraception. The estrogen is not biodegradable, right? So it doesn't break down easily in the environment. And then you think of all of the packaging, like for condoms. And you can look on, again, Google Images and just put condoms and beaches and places like that. And just says condoms everywhere and plastics that chemical contraceptives are packaged in. So there's all sorts of ways in which it's very environmentally unfriendly. And not to mention, as we already have, the delicate ecological system that is a woman's body.
Yes.
That we think it's foolish to dump chemicals into our food, into our air, into our water supply. And we're doing that with contraceptives. But women are also doing it to the delicate ecological system that is our own bodies.
Isn't it amazing that it seems like, generally speaking, the people who are so ecology conscious don't care about the body ecology of women? They seem to be the ones that are most for the contraceptive movements.
Yeah, it's very strange that you go to the supermarkets and places where, you know, supposedly environmentally sensitive people shop, like Whole Foods, and you get organic this, organic that, and they only want to buy organic. And then they're putting into their own systems day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, something that is a massive chemical assault on their own system. And just, I mean, the sense of it is that a woman having fertile cycles is a healthy woman, right? A woman who is not having fertile cycles is, there's something wrong with her system.
Right.
And we generally take a pill when we're sick. And these pills, the hormonal contraceptives, in a sense, turn a woman into an unhealthy person, into a person who is not having fertile cycles.
Right, by definition. They say that, or at least a lot of people are saying that contraception and the pill particularly should be covered in health care. It is not health care. It seeks to impede and damage the system. It doesn't seek to cure or heal.
Yeah, that's right. And no one really knows how long it takes a woman's body to recover, how long it really does take the body to recover her fertility, let's say, after she has uses contraception. Some people use sort of a boomerang effect, that there would somehow be more eggs that would be released, but it's quite the opposite. It's harder for a woman to get pregnant after she's been on contraceptives, and it's possible, I mentioned the low sex drive, that it's possible that it never returns to the levels that were there before.
It's interesting. There's so many infertile people today, and a lot of people don't know why. We might be hearing some of those reasons right now.
There's other influences of contraception on the phenomena of infertility.
Hmm.
Women are much more fertile in their 20s than in their 30s.
Yes.
And women are delaying childbearing until their 30s. So they already have a great reduced fertility, natural fertility, by the time they hit their 30s. Another is that people are engaging in sex outside of marriage, and they're acquiring sexually transmitted diseases. And sexually transmitted diseases can cause lesions in a woman's system, in the fallopian tube, in the uterus. And if the new embryo should find itself wanting to implant in somewhere in the uterus, it may not be able to because of some scar tissue that is there. And so there's different ways in which contraception facilitates infertility.
And, of course, contraception, the contraception revolution, commonly known as the sexual revolution, really inaugurated the premarital sex culture that you're talking about right now. So, of course, contraception is involved in this. Let me just give our phone number here, 978-454-4980. If you want to talk with Dr. Janet Smith tonight, 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at BTS Radio. Paul Morano with my in-studio co-host John Tudor is tonight on again with Dr. Janet Smith. And we have actually a phone call. Laurie from Burlington, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Hello. Thank you, Dr. Smith, for your insight, and Paul for having her on the show. It's great.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you got?
So I'm just a couple of things, but mostly just observances, and then your thoughts on the effects on fish. I guess the question would be, who would really care about that in this selfish world where they just, most people get into relationships and, winning the man, let's just say, it's the woman in this case who is more likely on birth control, is the more important thing for them. These are scientific facts that number one, how do you get them out there so that people care? And who honestly, who really would care so much about the effects on fish? I think they would care more about the effects on dogs or cats.
Well,
or,
Laurie, let me clarify.
It's a good point.
It is. Let me just clarify the question for Dr.
Yeah.
Smith. Are you asking why we would care about fish? I mean,
the point Dr. Smith was making. How do you make this an important fact?
That if fish are being affected, then human males too may be. There's a high chance that they're being affected.
So, I mean, I understand your point. I'm not certain that that argument alone would be sufficient to convince anybody not to contracept.
Right.
But it's a part of a whole vision about how contraceptives are an assault on what is natural. All right, and it has very bad consequences. I mean, I can't imagine convincing any single person, but I know there's all sorts of people who are worried about the environment, and there's actually whole fish populations in danger of dying out because of this. And so we talk about the necessity of preserving species, et cetera, you want to say, well, we've got to take some, we can't just sort of flip this off and say it's of no importance. But it's just to get people to understand that we're dumping chemicals into the environment, and one of those environments is a woman's body. And many of these women are very careful, again, about buying organic vegetables, organic fruit, because they realize that putting alien chemicals in their body can cause all sorts of damage, cancer among them. Well, that's exactly what the chemical contraceptives do.
Yeah, I am, and I'm not going to get me back on track if I get off topic here, but you know, if they care so much about those things, and understanding that, you know, some contraceptions can also cause abortion. I'm literally sitting here watching television, and on national ABC television, that I forget what the ad was, but it's about, oh, if you forget to take your pill before, then you can take this within 3 days afterward and you won't have any worries. And I'm thinking to myself, what are they saying here? You know, it's killing, it's potentially, right, killing what has already formed, in this case, a baby. So if people care so much about those other living creatures, that's great education, but how do you educate them on you know, the potential killing of an actual baby inside of them just from taking contraception?
Right, and the spectrum of women that need to be convinced is huge. But, for instance, among evangelical Protestants, many of them are profoundly pro-life but not opposed to contraception. But when they hear that contraception can cause early-term abortions, then all of a sudden they say, wait a second, we need to rethink this. And so there might be a whole lot of women who, again, could care less. They're already pro-abortion. It doesn't bother them that contraception causes an early-term abortion. Sure. But there are a lot of pro-life people who are using contraception. And if they knew that about it, it would make a difference. And it's important, again, to understand how that happens. One of the ways it happens is by, so I mentioned earlier, women have these various hormones in their bodies, and one set of hormones thickens every month the endometrium in a woman's body that is going to be the new home for any newly conceived human being. And if she's using a contraceptive, that can thin that uterine wall. It doesn't turn out to be the nice, thick, rich uterine wall that a baby can implant in. And so she may be conceiving and not even know that she's conceiving and flushing out that new little human being or embryonic human being in the course of bleeding.
Without even knowing it, that she was pregnant at all.
Knowing that she was pregnant. Now, you're talking about the morning after pill, which can work in two different ways. It depends on when a woman takes it. There are if a woman has not yet ovulated, a massive dose of hormones might serve to prevent her from ovulating. Mm. And if she doesn't ovulate, she can't get pregnant. But there is a debate how it works if it's post-ovulation. And there's only a short period of time. A woman can get pregnant for only 12 hours a month. An egg lives in her body for only 24 hours. And there's only a 12-hour period where she can get pregnant. But if she has gotten pregnant, and there's a debate about this, but there are many good scientists who think that if she takes one of those massive doses of hormones after she has conceived, it could, in fact, harm the embryo itself or, again, attack the endometrium. Nobody quite knows how it's all working, but it's perfectly plausible within the science of what we know about how these chemicals work on a woman's system that in fact, may be happening.
Okay, well, I'm gonna sign off now and continue to listen. I think that's something that science will figure out eventually and probably soon, because they seem to be able to figure everything else out if only people would listen.
And Laurie,
it is hard to do because you really can't sort of go into a woman's body and look at that happening.
Right.
So anyway, all sorts of theories are out there. There's a National Catholic Bioethics Quarterly a couple years ago had a series of articles, both by very faithful Catholics, some who think that the morning after pill does operate as an abortifacient, and others saying that it doesn't. But we do know that the hormonal contraceptives that most women take can be an abortifacient by thinning the endometrium.
Thank you, Laurie, and spread the truth.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for
calling. Keep listening. God bless.
You too.
All right.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. We're talking to the great Dr. Janet Smith author of Humani Vitae, A Generation Later, and of the talk Contraception, Why Not? And she is giving a whole slew of reasons why not. And all of them so far have been non-religious reasons. Because if something is unnatural and it does violate natural law, it is going to violate our own human nature. And obviously nobody can become happy doing that. It looks like we have another phone call. You want to take another one, Dr. Smith?
Sure.
Are you there? Fantastic. Yes. Kathleen from Hudson, you're on Beneath the Surface.
Hi, Janet. It's so nice to hear you on the phone locally.
Thank you.
I think this is a common, I don't know what to say, a common narrowing that occurs in our society about the word contraception. I realize that most people use hormonal contraception, or at least that's what I think is true. But there are a lot of other forms of contraception. And I'm just wondering, your CD is Contraception, Why Not? And I would expect that to be an overall discussion about, you know, IUDs, diaphragms, the pill, et cetera. And so I'm just wondering if there's something that you might be able to say to people of why these other forms of contraception would not be great for you either.
Good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I have so many things to say, it's always hard to get them all in. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And what I've said before about, I've already mentioned how the condom, first of all, it has about a 15 to 18% failure rate. That's huge, right? That's huge. 15% chance of getting pregnant. Right, over the course of a year if you use a condom. And it's much, much higher for young teenagers than it is for older married women because young people are in a hurry and they don't always put the condom on right and they don't do things right. So what is it actually for cohabiting teenagers, there's a 48% failure rate for the condom. The diaphragm is somewhere in the same vicinity, a somewhat lower failure rate. Again, almost nobody likes to use it. It's messy. It has to be inserted at a certain point of time. It can be unpleasant as far as having a nice, spontaneous lovemaking, or word that it were lovemaking, sex-having session. I mentioned how the condom deprives a woman of the protein benefits that are in the semen that give a woman an incredible sense of well-being that she should be receiving from the sexual act. But I don't even talk about these methods of contraception are called barrier methods. And I think that psychologically is very important. The act of sexual intercourse is meant to be an act where you give of yourself to another person and give of yourself in quite a unique and wonderful way. Obviously, there's nakedness, there's vulnerability, there's the possibility of having a child. All these are huge things. And now you're putting a barrier between yourself and this other person. And if it is a person you love, it's why would you want a barrier put in place? In fact, you know, it just sounds like, and even spermicide, a spermicide is used when you're using a diaphragm, and a spermicide is something that kills the sperm. So it's against the beginning of a new life, a new you and me, a new something that we could bring about that nobody else could bring about, something hostility that's written right into contraception. The IUD is, I mean, most of, if you even look at them, they're, you know, gnarled little metal little things that a woman puts in her body, and many places have been, for periods of time, outlawed because of the perforations that a woman can have by putting one of these in her uterus. Babies have been born with an IUD in their arm. Again, they work by creating kind of a hostile environment in the uterus. And again, there's a debate whether that hostile environment is hostile to the sperm or whether it's hostile to a new fertilized human being. Likely both, all right? So the word hostile is very important there. That if you read about the IUD, it's described as something that creates a hostile environment. You say, why are we having a hostile environment when we're in, why are we trying to create a hostile environment in this incredibly intimate, what should be a lovemaking act? So those are the major objections to the barrier methods, is that they are have a alarmingly high failure rate, and they deprive women of something that women, this condom does, of something that she should have, and they actually express hostility.
And they impede union, and they don't speak the language of love, do they?
Yes, we haven't really gotten there, but yes, that's I'm staying on a very physiological basis here.
Are you all set, Kathleen? Or?
I am. Thank you very much. I'll continue to listen.
Thanks a lot.
God, thank
you. Calling.
God bless. Bye.
978-454-4980, again, is the BTS hotline. Paul Morano here with John Tudoris in the studio, talking with Dr. Janet Smith of Humane Vitae fame, and we'll get to Humane Vitae in a moment. But, John, did you have something to say?
One thing that struck me through this all is that why is it that so many people seem to be, despite all the negative effects of contraception on women and what it does to the relationship between the woman and the man and consequently the family, why do people still do so? And then you look at sports, for example, and people, they lampoon anyone who's taking performance-enhancing drugs, right? I mean, the big scandal that happened in baseball, even when they weren't illegal, and you get all these players who did supposedly great things, and they're not even going to get in the Hall of Fame because they were suspected of, quote-unquote, cheating.
Yeah, in a sense, we're cheating nature and impeding human life.
Right. And,
yeah.
But
we don't care.
Perhaps maybe, I don't know, is that, Dr. Smith, do you see that as a perhaps a sign of the times that we prize sports over the fundamental nature of the family?
Well, we can get to that, but just what you're saying about males and steroids, really, it's not just that they're cheating, all right? It's bad for them.
Yes.
It's very bad for a man's body to be taking steroids, all right? And I have a friend who is a doctor, an oncologist, who's written, has a pamphlet that says, you wouldn't give steroids to the boys, why do you give them to the girls? Right? And it's a wonderful question, and I'll try to not get lost in this discussion here, but when they were first trying to discover a pill for women, a contraceptive pill for women, they were also trying to find one for males, as they're still doing. You'll read headlines every now and then that says male contraceptive pill being researched. And what they found, and you can, this is not easy, difficult to find, but it was a Dr. John Rock, who was one of the major inventors of the contraceptive pill for women, and he tested them in Puerto Rico, right? Very deliberately in Puerto Rico, because there were poor Catholic women there. And he figured if he could get poor Catholic women excited about using contraception, he would have a wedge against the church for speaking against contraception. Well, three women died in that first test group of women. Three women died in Puerto Rico. And when they came back, they simply adjusted the dosage of the hormones in the pill. When they were also, at the same time, basically, they were doing, again, a study for a male contraceptive pill. And one male in the study group had some slight shrinkage of his testicles. And they stopped all testing on the male contraceptive pill. Because I would say, that's intolerable, right? So what does this show us? It shows us that we think women's bodies and women's lives are meant to be in service of sex. And we should be willing to do all sorts of damaging things to our bodies, even putting ourselves at risk of dying, in order to be able to be available for sex. And that men won't do this kind of thing to their bodies. We won't give young boys steroids who want to build up their muscles. We say, go to the gym.
Right.
But if a girl comes in and a doctor, and believe me, follow the money. I mean, I heard a doctor who stopped, a gynecologist who stopped prescribing contraceptives, and his income went down $30,000 a month. All right, $30,000 a month. So when a girl of childbearing age comes into a doctor's office and she's not contracepting, he's going to make a mountain of money by prescribing contraceptives for anything, migraines, acne, whatever. You know, oh, she's going to be sexually active soon probably. Might as well give her a contraceptive. There's a new book out, and it's not that new, but it's been out for a year, couple of years, called Sweetening the Pill, Sweetening the Pill. And it's about a woman who's now was in her 30s or early 40s, and she was had taken the pill for 20 years. And then she started reading up on the side effects, and she was appalled at the side effects and couldn't believe her doctor never really drew these to her attention. And so she went off the pill and found that she had a whole different response to the world. She was a different person. And she, as I said, she was. She was chemically a different person. She was operating with the natural chemicals that her body produces rather than suppressing those natural hormones by synthetic chemical hormones. So doctors have been sold a bill of goods in medical school. They're told that that contraceptives is perfectly safe, and it's safer than pregnancy, and it's safer than this. And, I mean, the number of sexually transmitted diseases that women get because of contraceptives, promiscuous sex that comes about with the availability of contraception, these things aren't factored into the whole picture, let alone all the social consequences. I mean, I teach in Detroit. 80% of the babies born in Detroit are born to single mothers. Now, this is, believe me, is not because they don't have access to contraception, right? It's because they're having sex outside of marriage and they get pregnant. And those children just don't have the brightest futures, right? They don't have the brightest futures, nor do the women. The women get locked into very low-paying jobs basically for the rest of their lives. The kids are raised without fathers in their lives, which is very bad. Excuse me. So we haven't even begun to look at the social consequences. But
I'm told that we have only 4 minutes left, believe it or not.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's crazy. In these 4 minutes, could I get your take on the imploding populations in the world, particularly the Western world?
Is this 4 minutes for the first half or 4 minutes for the whole session?
Producer Cindy, is it for the whole thing? Yeah?
Have 1 hour for your show.
A whole hour has gone by already. That is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So I want to use my 4 minutes to just explain the vision that the church has for sexuality.
Awesome.
Our culture talks about sex, it thinks of sex as being just sex. All right, and it doesn't have any idea that sex should be connected to love or commitment or to babies. All right, they think that love, commitment, and babies are something entirely different from sex. All right, sex is just a pleasurable activity that you can engage in with anybody that you can get consent to engage in it with you. And you don't have to be in love. You don't have to have made a commitment to each other. You don't have to be prepared to have children. And the church understands that sex is a great gift that God has given human beings. And it brings with it a great joy and another great gift, which is the possibility of children, that God made the whole world so that as a support system for human beings. And the soul of every human being is destined for an eternal union with God. And God wants babies, all right? So he's tied together this great physical attraction that male and female have for each other, not only physical but psychological and spiritual. We want someone of the other sex who is going to make us whole in a way, bring something into our lives that we can't bring ourselves. We can't make a baby by ourselves. A woman can't have in her life what a man can bring, nor a man can have what a woman can bring. But especially what they can bring to each other is a child. And this is it's a gift that God gives to them that God wants given back to them. So every time a couple is engaging in an act of sexual intercourse, especially during the fertile time, they are essentially sending out an invitation to God to create a new human being, which it can only come if God does that. God creates every human soul. So that's the heart and soul of what the church is talking about when it says that contraception violates the unitive and the procreative meaning of the sexual act. It's reduced sex to just sex as saying that it has a spectacular larger meaning.
It's interesting. A lot of people think contraception simply impedes the procreative meaning of sex. I think what you're also saying is that contraception impedes the unitive meaning of sex. Real union doesn't really occur with contraception.
Well, a momentary union occurs, a union that is as long as the sexual act itself,
yeah.
which is can be very momentary. And people get up and they leave and they go off and never see each other again, don't know each other's last name. But an act of sexual intercourse that is open to the possibility of children, it says something. Again, it's a language. It says, what sex says, I find you very attractive. I'd like to experience this great pleasure with you and give you great pleasure. It also says, I love the way you walk and talk and your laugh and your values.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to children with you. And what does that mean? If you say I'm open to children with another person, what does that say? I'm open to spending my whole life with you. And I want you
yeah.
to be the father or the mother of my children. That's the most affirming thing that anybody can say to anyone else.
And it's interesting how the contraception revolution not only has caused the abortion culture we have, but also the divorce culture, unfortunately.
Yes, exactly.
Looks like we're out of time, Dr. Janet Smith. It was a great pleasure having you on, though.
We'll have to do it again and spend the whole hour on the teachings of Humani Vitae rather than the physical and social consequences.
Well, I will try to contact you on that one, and I look forward to that.
All right. Thank you for your invitation. I'm sorry for my forgetting that I had an interview tonight.
Oh, you're so on demand, I can understand that.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. God bless. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. Paul Morano signing off with my co-host, John Tudoris, and we will see you again next week, same time, same channel.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.